Are we witnessing the dawn of a new era in global politics? It certainly looks like we're seeing a dangerous resurgence of great power competition. Jim Sciutto analyzes this precarious moment in the new book, The Return of Great Powers, Russia, China, and the Next World War. Jim is CNN's chief national security analyst and anchor of CNN Newsroom on Max. His work has earned Emmy Awards, the Edward R. Murrow Award, the George Polk Award, and the DuPont Columbia Award. Here he is to share five key insights from his book.
Hi, I'm Jim Sciutto, anchor and chief national security analyst for CNN, and the author of The Return of Great Powers, Russia, China, and the Next World War. The idea for this book came as I was in Ukraine in February 2022, witnessing the opening salvos of the invasion, feeling the vibrations of the blasts, and listening to air raid sirens reminiscent, to me, of World War II. I'd covered the deteriorating relationship between Russia and the West for years, and had written another book, The Shadow War, in 2019, about how Russia and China were already fighting a war against the U.S. and its allies, but just below the threshold of open conflict, a shadow war. As those Russian tanks rolled across the border and Russian missiles whizzed over my head in Ukraine that February, it struck me that this was very different. The largest and bloodiest war in Europe in 80 years. The war, the conflict among the great powers, was now very much out of the shadows. And a real war among those powers, the risk of one, had returned. What would our world look like now? And how could we avoid another world war? My first insight is the Ukraine invasion was a 1939 moment. As I walked the streets of Ukraine during those first days and weeks of the war, I found myself constantly seeing images that seemed borrowed from another time, back in the middle of the last century. People running into bomb shelters, families packing their belongings into suitcases and boarding trains heading west, soldiers piling sandbags in city streets. With Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022, Putin calculated he could absorb Europe's largest nation by force, an idea its own people had explicitly and repeatedly rejected, and that the West would, Putin seemed to calculate, allow him to. He was resurrecting 1939 rules in the 21st century, and it's a model that he hoped to apply not just to Ukraine, but to other nations in Eastern Europe to, in effect, rebuild the old USSR. Trouble is, memories are short, and while Europe and the world had experienced what happens when they believe they can accommodate an expansionist leader, today we're still hearing many of the same excuses and rationalizations to make a deal with Putin that Ukraine is simply not our fight. And yet, from Ukraine, across Europe, and all the way to Asia, I've heard very differently from world leaders that allowing Ukraine to fall would tempt, not prevent, further wars as Russia and China seek to redraw borders by force of arms. Like in 1939, this is a test for the U.S. and for the world. My second insight is that Winston Churchill was right about the crocodile. Where's that come from? Well, I've met the Estonian Prime Minister Kaja Kallas numerous times through the years, here in the U.S., in Europe, and in Tallinn, the Estonian capital, on a trip there researching this book. She is an ardent student of history, and you would be as the leader of Estonia. It only gained its independence from Russia in 1991. She constantly quotes from books she's read on the history of the Second World War, the Soviet Union, Ukraine, and more, as she looks for lessons from the past for today. And as part of her history lessons to me, she was fond of quoting Churchill, in particular, what he famously said of Hitler, that an appeaser is one who feeds a crocodile, hoping it will eat him last. And we've seen this rule play out with Putin. From Georgia in 2008 to Ukraine in 2014 and again in 2022, as well as other targets of Putin in Moldova and Montenegro and beyond, he takes what he can get and reads any accommodation as an invitation for the next act of aggression. Those who seek to accommodate him end up, as Churchill might say, as his next meal. Ceding him Ukraine or China, Taiwan, would not be the last target from Moscow or Beijing. Just as we remember from 1939, We need to know that the failures of leadership at the time among appeasers in Europe and the U.S., they mattered. There is nothing wrong with preferring peace to war. The danger is that tyrants such as Putin may be impossible to appease. And that's what recent history has shown. My third insight is that their security is our security. I moved to Beijing, China in 2011 with my family when I took the job of chief of staff to the U.S. ambassador. It was an adventure. We traveled the country, made many mainland Chinese friends and friends from all over the world. Beijing was an international city. 10 years later, though, the vast majority of our foreign friends have left the country, as have many mainland Chinese. And it's not just a general fear of less friendly relations between China and the U.S., but also the very specific fear that they could find themselves personally in the middle of it. There's a long list of foreigners who've been harassed or even put under house arrest for, say, getting on the wrong side of a business deal with a mainland Chinese company. The environment for journalists is more hostile, and many State Department employees won't take their families with them anymore. The independence of Ukraine and other Eastern European nations, as well as Taiwan, may seem like distant problems, their problems. But the rules that keep them safe and independent are the same rules that allow us to live, travel, communicate, do business, and profit from all those contacts and connections and business around the world. If China and Russia and their close environs become more hostile territory, and if Russia and China can not only carve off parts of the world, but also violate laws and norms against harassment, extrajudicial imprisonment, or worse, theft of secrets, and more, our world becomes smaller and a dog-eat-dog kind of Hobbesian landscape. It's even more pointed as both countries violate or avoid treaties, including nuclear and space treaties, intended to keep the great powers from going to war. This standoff may seem like a distant problem, but it's one that very much affects our own freedom and well-being at home and abroad. My fourth insight is that Americans very much have a choice this year. Here's a story. Ambassador John Bolton, who served as Trump's national security advisor, told me a story about Trump and Taiwan. He would raise a Sharpie marker, point to the tip of it, and then point to his Resolute desk and say, "See this Sharpie? That's Taiwan. See this desk? That's China." The point was, in his view, Taiwan didn't have a chance against China, and therefore, the U.S. had no business trying to defend Taiwan. Whatever your politics, the 2024 U.S. election poses a clear choice to American voters about the world and the U.S. role in it. Trump favors accommodation, at least some of it, with Russia and China, and a retreat from U.S. mutual defense commitments to Europe, NATO, South Korea, and Japan. Biden supports them. The choice is between an America accommodating the world's rising authoritarians and abandoning its allies and many decades-old alliances, or at least weakening them, and an America leading the stand against them. There are clearly risks with both approaches. In the book, I argue that, as in 1939, accommodation actually tempts further land grabs and possibly more wars. Deterrence, while also certainly carrying the risk of escalation, at least raises the costs for Russia and China of breaking yet more borders and doing more to tear down an international system, which, albeit flawed, has helped keep the relative peace among the great powers for some 80 years. You can agree or disagree with that argument, but the election offers a clear binary choice between the two approaches. My fifth insight is that there are still heroes in all this. In Ukraine, in Taiwan, the Middle East, and beyond, I encountered brave men and women who are risking everything to defend their countries and counter authoritarians' worst aggression. In Ukraine, I met young men and women of every background and education level and career, lining up to join the military to defend their country. I remember the bright-faced young men wearing hockey knee pads as they showed up to volunteer, and an 80-year-old Ukrainian man who said he was trained as a sniper in the old Soviet army and wanted to do his part. Also, U.S. military veterans flying all the way to Ukraine to join up to fight as well. On the other side of the world, inspired by Ukraine and forever watching Ukraine's defense and the world's response to Russia's invasion, I met Taiwanese soldiers preparing to defend their island against a much larger and better armed adversary. I also met diplomats the world over looking for ways to avoid the worst outcomes among the great powers, including when, in late 2022, U.S. officials feared that Russia was close to ordering a nuclear strike on Ukraine. All of their commitment and courage is an inspiration and something we can all learn from and be inspired by and draw some hope from, too. I hope you will learn from and enjoy the book. It's not meant to frighten, but to draw attention to the very real change we are living through and hopefully chart a path to peace.
Thank you, Jim. That was Jim Sciutto with five big ideas from The Return of Great Powers, Russia, China, and the Next World War. You might also like our book bite for The Showman, Inside the Invasion That Shook the World and Made a Leader of Volodymyr Zelensky by Simon Schuster. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.